I really emphasize if a young person can connect to one person, then that makes a huge difference in their lives, particularly in the K-12 community. So, you know, my advice to school staff is looking for those kids who need that connection, because you could be it. And you could be the classified staff member, you know, who's supporting them, or the administrator. You know, it doesn't matter what your role is, but the connection is huge. And then really believing that you have strengths.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Path Found. This is the podcast where we unpack the winding, messy, and meaningful journeys that lead to the work we love and a life that feels right. I'm Monica Argandonia, and each week I'm going to sit down with someone whose path didn't follow a straight line, but it still led them to purpose and fulfillment and often surprising success. These are real conversations about mentorship, pivots, networking, self-doubt, mistakes that we all make, and what it means to find direction when the map runs out. These stories are here to inspire and guide you. We'll dig into the things school didn't teach, like how to navigate career twists, life lessons, and big transitions. If you like what you hear, please share the podcast with a friend, subscribe, and leave us a review. You can also find us on Instagram at PathFoundPodcast or online at KeystoneNetwork.org. There you can send in your comments, suggest guests or topics, or even apply to be a guest yourself. This podcast is for you, my students, my peers, and anyone figuring it out as they go. As a longtime teacher and anthropologist, I've always believed in the power of stories. They remind us we're not alone, and that it's okay to change your mind, take a different route, or still be unsure of what comes next. This is my pivot too, and so I'm glad to have you on this journey with me. Now let's get started. What does it mean to live a life defined by compassion and to keep finding new ways to help others grow? Today on Path Found, I'm joined by Renee Cavanaugh, a school-based mental health leader whose path has taken her from hospital wards in London to classrooms in California. Renee's story is about following curiosity, trusting your instincts, and learning through experience. Whether that meant starting over in a new country, supporting families through trauma, or traveling the world with her husband on a one-way ticket. From her early dream of becoming an ER doctor to leading mental health programs for children today, Renee shows how purpose can evolve when you stay open, brave, and deeply human. We talk about resilience, mentorship, and what it means to model balance and empathy, not just for our students, but for ourselves. Okay, welcome, Renee, to Path Found. I always start with, you know, kind of origin stories and what you were like in high school. So if you just kind of want to tell me what that was like, those years.
High school was fun for me, but also it had its moments of being pretty stressful, trying to fit in. I was very academically focused, probably too much so if I look back upon myself now. I put a lot of pressure on myself to be perfect in grades. I also played two sports, basketball and swimming, and those led me to have some great friends who took the pressure off. But I did put a lot of pressure on myself in high school.
Was it for an end goal? Like you knew you were going to college and like why?
I think I always knew I was going to go to college. My parents were very supportive in the sense of like finding our paths. Travel is a huge thing in my family, but I never felt pressure to go from my parents or to go to school. It was really internal pressure to receive a certain grade. So, but I don't think it took away from my high school experience, but certainly as a parent now, I really try to emphasize with my own daughters, like, it's okay to get a B. It's going to be okay.
So did you know you wanted to go to college? What did you want to do? Like, did you know at high school or?
Yeah, I wanted to be an ER doctor. So that was sort of my whole path is emergency room. I'm very calm under pressure. I always knew that about myself. So I felt like that would be a good path. I went to college with under a bio major. And then my junior year sort of looked at like a day or so internship. I went to UC San Diego. And so it's a high medical school. And I did an internship. And the woman really that I followed was amazing. But she also kind of made it clear it was hard for her to have a family life too. And I knew that I wanted to be a parent and be involved. So I switched my degree to human development and communication disorders.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this was junior year.
Yeah.
Junior year. Okay. And then how was that?
I loved it. I found definitely my path, a lot more interest for me in school, a little bit less pressure. I found it was very easy to grasp the new material. And I didn't know what I was going to do at that point, to be clear, but I definitely liked the subjects I was learning.
So what happens after college?
I went to grad school and got my master's in social work and moved to a new city. So my parents have always emphasized travel. They are huge travelers themselves. My mom grew up an army brat. I think she went to something like 18 different schools and lived all over the world. And my dad is from the same hometown and went into his father's business, not by choice. He was sort of forced to do that. And they travel everywhere, my parents. There's not a continent they haven't been to. So they were like, yeah, Renee, go. This is your time. Explore the world. Do your thing. And I did it with a friend. A friend went to grad school with me in the same program, but I also had my best friend live in Boston. And so it was like coming home, but I also was on my own on the other side of the country and living my best life. It was fantastic.
So you went to grad school right after college.
I did.
But did you know what you were going to grad school for? Did you know what you wanted to do?
No, I used the Career Center at my undergrad university. And they said, this sounds like social work is going to open up a lot of doors for you. And I thought social work was like CPS, you know, work before I went to the Career Center. But afterwards, it was, you know, really the world of mental health in general, building people's strengths. You could go into therapy, you know, foster and adoption, really like lots of things. And that interests me, the people part of that connection, but also diagnosing and, you know, writing treatment plans. And really that still has a little bit of the medical side that I really enjoy as well.
So you're getting your master's in Boston and you like the program. This is what you want to do. So then what happens? You graduate.
Yeah, well, within my program, I studied abroad as an undergrad and then as a graduate student in London. And then also in my grad program, I went to Thailand and India for 6 weeks. And so when I graduated from my grad school program, there was a previous grad from the same program who was offering new graduated, you know, social workers positions in London. And each time I went to travel, you know, and do a study abroad experience or whatever, my dad's always the first person I would call because he's the money guy. So, you know, to help me. And the running joke in our family is that each time I traveled or I did something big, that my wedding dinner would start with like filet mignon and then slowly went to like chicken. And so when I called him and said, Dad, I really want to take this opportunity and work in London. I think it would be really cool. I want to try it for a year. The only thing he said to me was, all right, do it, but you're having hot dogs for your wedding.
That's great.
So I did it. And I moved to London almost right after grad school. So I graduated in May and I moved in August.
Wow. So what kind of job was it? What were you going to do?
So at the time, I was 24 years old and, you know, had to find a new apartment and set up utilities and just all the things to challenge yourself. Like looking back, I think, wow, that was a lot. But at the time, I was just like, yeah, this is what you do, you know.
But in a different country.
But in a different country. I bought a book, something like, I forget what it was called, but it was basically like for Americans who are living in London, like, this is who you call for utilities to set up your utilities. This is who you buy a cell phone from. Because I had no idea how to do any of that. And my first job, I was working for one of the local boroughs, is their counties, what they call them in England. And I was working in a hospital doing mainly social work with young women and older women, but they were pregnant and addicted to different drugs, methadone being a predominant one. And so sort of supporting them, finding them housing, therapy, working with the babies if they needed to be placed after that. A whole new world for me. Like I, you know, at the time, like that was just eye-opening because that wasn't my experience, you know, growing up.
Did you like it?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I really enjoyed myself. I love the connection with people. The borough I worked in had predominantly people from India. So I had already traveled there and sort of worked, you know, volunteered with Mother Teresa's organizations in Calcutta. And so the people that I was connecting with, you know, in these labor and delivery rooms with like the monitors strapped to their bellies, I'd never seen, you know, a baby born, let alone like standing next to a woman. It was very helpful for me to say, like, I've been there and I've done this, and their families had all left them, and just being that non-judgmental person, like there to support them as they're trying to make a new path for themselves. I loved it.
So this is incredibly brave. I mean, you went to another country, got a job that, you know, was really out of your comfort zone and experience, and there you are doing it. What do you think was in your background or your personality or whatever it was that helped you do all that and stick it through?
You know, I'm going to put it down to my family. I have some pretty incredible women in my family who have done amazing things in their everyday lives. And my parents were incredibly supportive and just really finding, like, no was never an answer for me. If any of myself or my two brothers wanted to try something, it was, okay, we'll figure out, you know, how to make it work. And I know we didn't have a lot of money, you know, growing up. My mom went to college actually when I was 12. She was a yard duty at our local, you know, in our school district, and then went back to school, got her teaching credential. My dad supported her, you know, 1,000%. And she retired as an assistant superintendent. And so I just see, you know, and that was all when I was like preteen, my mom did all that. And so my parents were just like, the world is your oyster. Travel is really important. You're going to learn a lot as an individual. So they just always figured it out. And I crawled home a lot. Like, there were times where, not when I was in London, but certainly like earlier in my life. And my parents would just say, we hear you, but you're not coming home. Like, you have to figure this out. And that sort of tough love in a positive way.
Yeah.
But I always knew I could come home if I absolutely needed to. But that was never the first option. They always wanted us to work through our hard times.
That's incredible. So you're doing this job. You're loving it and learning a ton. And then what happens?
Well, something big. I met my husband within like a week of moving to London. And he was just a friend of a friend that we had a connection with from grad school. And so my year in London ended up being a little bit longer. And then career-wise, during that time, I went from working in the hospital to being promoted and working more on your typical on-call CPS type work. And then from that moment, it was right in the July 7th bombings that happened in London. And so I was living there at the time. And unfortunately, a lot of children were involved during that time. And so I happened to be on duty as the senior person and got that phone call and then started down a new path of investigation. And so my role shifted from kind of going into homes to working with families and MI6 to support like their investigations, really. Which was also like, thinking about it at the time, I'm a young American and Americans weren't favored, you know, at that time in the world. But I didn't necessarily feel like unsafe, but it was always like, oh, this is really happening. Okay. But I found that I was really good at that too. I had to testify in courts. It sort of led me to do more forensic interviews with children who've been abused and supporting them through that, supporting their, you know, the spouses through domestic violence, things of that nature. So just new paths, but ultimately connecting with people again and supporting and building one's strengths. That sort of also was just I never considered my work to be hard because it was always on the human level of just doing the right thing.
But I would imagine a lot of that was learning on the job.
Absolutely. I mean,
way more than a classroom could have ever prepared you for.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So good people, you had good mentors. Did you have people helping?
I had great mentors. My first manager, her name was Jenny, and she was tough, man. She was real tough. And I remember she said to me, you had to do these investigations within like 5 days or something. And if you didn't, then we'd get it like a penalty from the government, right? That you didn't do these investigations. But it didn't matter how many times you were going out and knocking on the person's home or trying to do it. It only mattered if you made that point of contact. And so I didn't make a point of contact, even though multiple times. And I started crying. And she said, girl, you're going to be a leader in this world, but you cannot cry. Like, you have got to, you know, toughen up. Yeah. It's literally what she said to me. And I went home and I remember talking to my partner at the time and just kind of going, man, she was so mean. But that was also a pivotal moment where I often think back on that conversation and think, come on, Renee, like, you can do this.
Yeah. So what happens? You meet your husband. Mm-hmm. Did you have hot dogs at your wedding?
We did. Well, everybody had filet mignon, but it was a surprise. And when we were all sitting down and eating, my parents had organized like a crock pot full of hot dogs to come to the head table.
It's a great
picture. Yeah. It was so, yeah. My dad keeps his word. That's for sure.
So how long do you stay in London?
So I lived there for about 7 years or so. And then
way longer than a year.
Way longer. Yeah. But during that time, like, you know, we were dual income, no kids, and just having a lot of fun learning about ourselves and, you know, who we wanted to be. And I felt like I had family, though. My husband's family one of his sisters lives there. And so we still had that peace. And then we decided, if we're going to move, you know, now's the time to kind of move. So then then it was like 2007, we got married. And then 2008, he got his green card to be able to come to the US. And then after that, we decided we didn't want your traditional honeymoon, but we knew we wanted to move back to the US. So his idea was to take a year out and travel the world. And so we had just been saving and just made some good decisions, you know, financially for us. And so we left the world and we just bought a one-way ticket around the world and off we went.
That's incredible.
Yeah. I never thought this was all Ronan. I never thought I would do anything like that.
So you went every continent?
We went everywhere except for South America. We couldn't find the time. So that's still on our bucket list. But no, we started in Australia and then just kind of made our way going west from there. So we flew from LA to Australia and then up down New Zealand, Southeast Asia. In Vietnam, we followed my grandpa's path during the war, went to like some really inner country places in Vietnam. And then we went to China. We joined a tour group there and traveled on the trains everywhere and just really immersed ourselves in the Chinese culture. And then from there, we flew to Zimbabwe and met up with a different tour group and camped. We lived like in canvas tents for about 3 months through Africa. And yeah, we didn't really go through Europe that time because we had already done a lot of traveling mm-hmm. just living in London. So we went to places that you probably wouldn't go on your own, you know, like individually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what do you think the biggest takeaways from that? You know, traveling, I agree, traveling is so important. Mm-hmm. It just expands our worlds. But what do you think you got out of that?
Yeah, so many things. I think one of the most important things I got from that was my connection with my husband. We are on our own. And I think just being newlyweds, that really solidified our relationship that we can do anything and supporting each other. I think the second thing I learned is that makes me who I am, I feel today, is my ability to immerse ourselves in different cultures. Like we were backpacking, you know, like one backpack on our backs, and we were using as little money as we could in each place in order to sustain this long trip. So with that, we dined with the locals and this was pre-phones. Like we didn't have a phone. There was no, you know, iPad, like there was nothing like that. And so we just connected with people to find out, where do I stay? Where do we camp? Where do we eat? Where's the cheapest place? You know, and my husband is a huge connector of people. He will talk to anybody and connect with them. And so that then supported me in doing that too. And I think through all of that, when I meet people today in my like current life, I find it very easy to understand, you know, where people are coming from, to build their strengths, to relate to them or say, oh, I've been there, or it's a long time ago. How is it now? You know, people's different religions. Like it really opened my world to be able to, I feel like, be a good therapist.
An amazing experience.
Yeah.
You know, and I think probably in many ways you learned more from that than even a master's program.
Absolutely. Right? Like, yes.
That real life experience.
Very
so you finished that and now you have to get back to work.
Now we have to go back to real life and find jobs. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So where'd you land?
We landed in DC, Washington, DC. And I worked for the Department of Defense, which was close to my heart. My family, I have a lot of family in the military, but it wasn't something I sought out. It was just something that was available. And so I worked at Walter Reed Medical Center and in their psychiatry department, really working with young families who had, you know, a parent or a guardian who served and then came back predominantly with like missing a limb or PTSD. So my role was really supporting the children's and then the family as a whole. And then the military did a great job. They were sort of one of the first ones to build school mental health programs. So having mental health providers go into schools on bases in the DC area and supporting the families at the school. So meaning like it's not a hospital setting, your commanding officer is not going to be near you, but it's really connecting and receiving the support on a neutral ground. So they asked if I wanted to head that up. And so my whole family are educators, like literally almost every person on my mom's side and my two brothers. So that wasn't foreign to me, you know, the education, public education world. So myself and another colleague, we started some of the military's first school behavioral health programs on the East Coast. And it was great. And that's where I found my passion. I love school mental health.
Wow.
Yeah.
So did you land in DC and then get the job, or you
Yes.
landed the job and that's why you moved to DC?
No, my husband got a job. So we moved moved, and then I found a job when we were there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So unexpected, this passion now for this kind of angle of mental health. Mm-hmm. So how long did you stay in DC?
We were there 7 or 8 years. The girls were both born there, and the school mental health world just continued to build and build. And then eventually we expanded into different schools. And so my role just became both kind of on the ground, so to speak, in terms of like supporting and having my own individual clients or families. And then also more of the wider admin role where I was developing programs. So that was exciting too.
So how come you left?
Oh, well, Ronan kept getting laid off. I think he had like 3 layoffs. One was like, oh my goodness. I think it was like a week before my oldest was born. He was laid off. It was so stressful. And it was just that downturn in the market and in his particular field. And so after I think his 3rd, layoff, we just kind of said, okay, if you want to look for jobs in California, like we didn't have any family in DC, a great friend group, my goodness, made some of the best friends. But I wanted to move to California. I think Ronan likes it here, but I sort of dragged him at the same time. And so he got a job. And so he moved to California. But I loved my job. I loved the role that I had in DC. And so I told him, I am not moving unless your job's successful. So I stayed with our 2 girls under 4 in DC for almost 9-10 months before he found found his footing here. He'd come back and visit, of course, and it was very hard for him. But he was here and I was in DC. And then eventually he knew this job was going to stick for him. So I said, okay, we'll move.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And so now you have to find another job.
So I applied my current job now in a different district, and there was just something about the people that interviewed me in my current role. And so I accepted that position, and I am really, really happy in my current role.
That's so great.
Yeah. Yeah.
It all worked out. So you are in mental health and education. You work with young people. You have this background. Have things changed? Has your profession changed? Have students, young people, what do you see?
Yeah, that's a great question. It absolutely has changed. So this is my 10th year in this current role. And I run the mental health program for elementary schools in a local district. And I would say our referrals from the first year to now, without having the numbers in front of me, have probably tripled in terms of the amount of people who have been referred for, mental health supports in schools or are asking for the support themselves. So that tells me a couple of things. One, the need is either we're better able to identify the need. Mm-hmm. And I think the stigma regarding mental health is decreasing, mm-hmm. both of which are exciting as a provider, in our community. I think that after COVID, the need has significantly increased, especially for anxiety. Anxiety is our number one referral. And that can go missed in a lot of people because anxiety could look like behavior, that you see externalized, or it can be internalized. And so it's really exciting for me to be in this position, because I think that the district I work for does a great job of destigmatizing mental health, but there is, a lot to be said for our current environment and a lot of cuts being done to our field, which has been shown to really support, people and prevent a lot of things for young people in the future.
What would you say to young people? What would you say, there's lots of pressures and, what advice do you have? We've talked about mental health before on this show. This is not, medical advice in any way, but just from a professional standpoint, because I think, finding your path and whatever it may be and navigating school and life after, that all takes a toll at some point.
Yes.
Or there's anxiety or those kinds of things. And I think stress is not always a bad thing. These are all kind of normal feelings. But what would you say, general advice and helping young people?
I am a very much a strengths-based person. And so I tend to give less, I suppose this is advice, but I don't see it as advice. I tend to really encourage people that we all have strengths within us. And it's up to us and maybe some supportive people around us to help us identify those strengths. But every one of us is, destined for whatever our path of greatness is, depending upon what we want, and connecting to people. So when I, am training or talking with parents or talking with an individual teacher, I really emphasize if the young person can connect to one person, then that makes a huge difference in their lives, particularly in the K-12 community. So looking for, you know, my advice to school staff is looking for those kids who need that connection, because you could be it. And you could be the classified staff member, you know, who's supporting them, or the administrator. You know, it doesn't matter what your role is, but the connection is huge. And then really believing that you have strengths. Every single person has amazing qualities about themselves, but not everybody sees that or feels that for themselves.
And so when you talk about connecting, like with an adult, with a friend, with...
I mean, it could be anything. I think if we're talking about, you know, school staff members, I'm really looking to the adults, you know, for that. And oftentimes, you know, particularly young people need, you know, that adult in their life to be able to believe in them so that they can do what they want to do and feel confident within that and build their self-esteem. But, you know, friend connection is hugely important as well. But I was referring to the adult.
Yeah. And I think that's great advice. It goes toward mentorship and right, having that other person there that can see your strengths and help you navigate and asking for help, I think is a big part. So you have not more or less kind of a linear path in that you went to school for something, you went to grad school for it, and then you applied that. You made that work. Different jobs, different experiences, but still had traveled the world for a year. And what do you tell your kids? Like, do they know what they want to do? What do you... what advice do you give them?
I think I tell them, you know, similar things to what like my husband and I experienced with our own parents in terms of, you know, really believing in themselves and opening their eyes to experiencing new things. But also, you know, if one thing, like if I could go back and tell my high school self, it's okay to not always get the best grade. It's okay not to, you know, I never really felt like I had to be like the best in sports. That wasn't really me, but things came naturally to me. And I think that naturalness sort of put pressure on me. So what we try and tell our girls is like, you made a mistake. You just pick yourself back up and you learned from it. That's kind of our biggest thing, and not to take themselves so seriously. I mean, everybody loves their own kids, but if I'll brag on my own, I feel like the girls sort of, they have very good balancing with that. They are sort of navigating the world in a good way that I didn't do, you know, when I in my younger self. So I'm really proud of them for that.
I think you did a pretty good job.
Thanks.
Yeah. And the pressure I always like to say to my kids, is this going to be significant in 10 years from now?
Exactly.
Most of the things that we get really wrapped up in aren't.
It's so true.
You know, so you just got to let it go.
Yeah.
Move on and do your best the next time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that is great advice.
Yeah.
Any last words for, you know, again, this is for young people wanting to, you know, figure out careers and life and all of that kind of stuff. Any last thoughts that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I think, you know, lean into yourself, knowing that there's always something that's going to be there for you. It might not be right away. Be open to possibilities, because I don't think I'm done. Like, I don't know that I want to do this job, you know, for another 20 years. I can honestly say, no, I don't. I want to find something else in the field. So I think, you know, always allowing yourself to explore new things and be open to new possibilities and connecting with people, because everybody, when you peel stuff back, that's the human nature, is to want to connect. So I think if we can kind of, you know, level that playing field in the sense and look at people that way, our world might be a better place.
Nice. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing all that and those experiences and for the work you do. I think it's so important.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Path Found. If anything we talked about today connected with you or gave you a new perspective, we'd love it if you subscribed, left a review, or shared the episode with someone you care about. You can also find us on Instagram at Path Found Podcast. To explore more stories, resources, and ways to get involved, visit KeystoneNetwork.org. This podcast is just one part of the journey. At Keystone Network, we're helping young people and anyone figuring it out as they go build meaningful futures one step at a time. A huge thank you to my podcast editor, David Strutt. You can find him on LinkedIn, for helping bring these stories to life, and to Elizabeth Miner at Silvermine Creative for the beautiful artwork and web design. And if you're on your own path, navigating the unknown, making a pivot, or simply figuring it out as you go, just know you're not alone. The route may not be linear, but there's always a way forward. I'm Monica Argandonia, and I'll see you next time on Path Found.